What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith. I'm Molly Karam Rose. And Stephen A., you said it. James Harden, 30, 15, and 14, zero turnovers. That's never happened. And Zion Williamson, 26, 10, and 5, putting on a show. Let's dive right into it. Mr. Smith, you're up first. More impressive night. Would you go with Harden or Zion?
I'm going to go with Harden. And the reason why I'm going to go with Harden, believe it or not, is not just the fact that it was a triple-double. It was the fact that he played 44 minutes and did not commit one single turnover. I want to repeat that. James Harden finished the night with 30 points, 15 assists, 14 rebounds, in 44 minutes played on 52% shooting from the field, 43% shooting from three-point range, and did not commit a single turnover. Just think about that for a second. Not a single turnover. This man right here is playing at an MVP caliber level. And then when we look at the evidence and we see, unfortunately, my brother Steven Silas struggling in Houston as a rookie head coach, first time he's ever been a head coach after 20 years as an assistant, this guy, Steven Silas, and the Houston Rockets have lost 12 straight. They're one of the worst teams in basketball at this particular moment in time. And obviously that has a lot to do with the fact that James Harden is no longer wearing a Houston Rockets uniform. But then you see him go to Brooklyn. Kyrie's gone, no problem. KD's gone, no problem. Still in all, James Harden, even though Kyrie played last night, shows up against a San Antonio Spurs team that's still a playoff team. They're not a scrub team. And this brother plays 44 minutes, drops a 30-point triple-double, shoots better than 50% from the field, better than 40% from three-point range, and doesn't commit one single turnover. It doesn't get closer to perfect than that. Zion's a stud, but he wasn't perfect. James Harden last night was pretty close to perfect. That's why I say more impressive night was for Harden.
James Harden's better than Zion Williamson. He had a better night last night than Zion Williamson. And I'll even go you one better, Stephen A. For the first time in James Harden's career, through the MVP, through the near MVPs, through everything he's ever done, averaging 30-whatever points and everything, for the first time in his career, I get the feeling like I might be watching the best player in basketball when I watch Harden. I've never felt that way before. He's got that glow. He's got the last dragon glow right now, Stephen A. He's playing at a whole different level.
And there's no show enough to stop him.
That's right. Show enough. Yeah, that's right. He's more like Bruce Leroy right now. Look, he's amazing. But I was more impressed by Zion last night. And I was more impressed by Zion last night because he's a 20-year-old kid. He is man strong and big and all that stuff and has real maturity beyond his years. But most people who are 20 are not done with college yet. He is a 20-year-old kid doing that in the NBA. And what exactly did he do? Last night, against the best team in basketball this year so far, who's been crushing everybody, right? What happens? The Jazz are up. You're coming into the second half. They already got the lead. And now comes the avalanche, all the open shooters. It's over. And what I saw was a team led by Zion Williamson imposing their will on the Jazz. Not the Jazz or the Avalanche, but Zion Williamson is more physically the manifestation of an actual avalanche. He, and in this NBA, Stephen A., where it's hard to be like a kind of Shaq-like physical presence and just impose that, he did it to the Utah Jazz and led his team. And I gotta tip my cap to Stan Van Gundy because Zion Williamson is playing point forward. And so I just brought up the fact that he can muscle his way inside, but he is not only a willing passer, he has real court vision. And the fact that Van Gundy has given him the freedom to grab the rebound, run the floor, make a play, he's doing it. So for a 20-year-old kid built like Zion, right, to be able to do that in this modern NBA to the Utah Jazz is, to me, the most impressive thing I saw in the NBA last night, and that includes James Harden.
Well, I understand where you're coming from because Zion Williamson had a big night. Obviously, it was against the Utah Jazz, and what I'm most impressed by watching him is his quickness. He's really quick. I mean, he's got that first step. He's got some speed, but he's also got some quickness, some acceleration. And when you look at it from that perspective, and then you consider the power, the strength, just the mass of this young man, the sky's the limit for him as long as he can stay healthy. And God help anybody if he plays, you know, with a little bit more ambidextrous skills where he uses both hands instead of just his left. God help everybody once that happens if he stays healthy, because he's definitely got the heart. He ain't scared of anything. He's scaring everybody else. He's incredibly impressive, no doubt about it. And it's also hurting Ja Morant from the standpoint that we know that Ja Morant can ball. We're proud of the fact that he's Rookie of the Year, but every time you see Zion, you recognize that if Zion had been healthy, Ja Morant would not have been Rookie of the Year. That's pretty easy to surmise. But in the end, still in all, when you look at the Utah Jazz, the top shooting three-point team in the league, they shot 17 of 43 from three-point range last night. You look at Mike Conley Jr., didn't have that good of a night. Look at Donovan Mitchell. He shot 7 of 21 from the field. He didn't have that good of a night. So it wasn't really, really their night. And you got to give New Orleans credit because their defense has been horrid, and they've been trying to improve upon that. And last night, they prioritized that to some degree. So Stan Van Gundy deserves a lot of credit in that regard as well, because we all know the man can coach. But in the end, still in all, I don't think that compares to Harden. 30, 15, 14, yeah, or 50% shooting from the field, 42% shooting from three-point range, 44 minutes played, and not one single turnover in 44 minutes.
Harden had
a
better night.
Point guard. I can't ignore that.
Harden had the better night, and I think the strongest part of your argument is the no turnovers. Like, for a guy that had to play 44 minutes, to be the primary ball handler, to orchestrate the offense, to have a triple-double with 30-something points, and not to turn the ball over is extremely impressive. We're talking about two very impressive performances last night. Zion Williamson was taking it to Rudy Gobert. He was taking it to Rudy Gobert. There was nothing anyone could do. That's the number one guy you'd want probably in the league, in the paint, to try to stop him. There was no stopping him. You talk about Zion's quickness, and you could talk about him off the dribble, and he has better handles than given credit for, and he has enough wiggle in his game to be successful at this level as a wide body. What about his quickness to grab the board off his own misses? I'm trying to think. I think it's the quickest I've ever seen. In other words, a guy goes up in the paint. He puts the ball up. It doesn't, you know, he doesn't get it to go. Zion gets back up off the floor faster than anyone I've ever seen and does it with crazy hops. He was, considering the team they played, considering his age, considering his responsibilities in the offense now, considering the way the game was going and the momentum and what felt like the inevitable. The Jazz are always the ones who make the halftime adjustments, and then here it comes. And they were already winning in the game. By the way, I didn't mention this. Considering this is a Zion Williamson-led team, and the Jazz did come back. Of course they eventually surged back, and the Pelicans held them off in a night of amazing performances, both by Zion and Harden. I was most impressed. Not arguing it was the best performance. I was most impressed by the 20-year-old, Zion Williamson.
Last time I checked, when we asked what was more impressive, you're talking about what was the better performance, and you've already conceded that that's James Harden, which means you're just talking because you want to hear your voice. You want to hear your own voice. You already know
more impressive.
I'm right. You already know I'm right. You know I'm right.
No, just more impressive.
It's okay, Max. It's
you
all right to just look in the camera
the
and say, Stephen A.
You're
absolutely right.
What was so impressive about Tom Brady in the Super Bowl? He's 43 years old.
It's not hard things to do. You already said, Stephen A., you're absolutely right.
How did Tom Brady get in
the
combo?
The point is, I'm pointing out age and circumstances. Why it impresses me.
Record-breaking night.
Oh, you got under my skin just then, Stephen A. Smith.
You said you're wrong.
All right, let's just move on. Guys, Harden isn't the only one who wanted out of Houston. Obviously, Deshaun as well. J.J. Watt joining his former teammate DeAndre Hopkins in Arizona, reaching a two-year deal. A source telling Adam Schefter the deal's worth $31 million, 23 guaranteed. Kyler Murray tweeting at this photo with Watt and Carl Anthony Towns. Meanwhile, our Ed Werder tweeting this. I was told J.J. Watt's first criteria in choosing his team would be the quality of the quarterback. So this seems like an endorsement for Kyler Murray. By the way, Kyler, just a young buck there, senior in high school about 6 years ago. Max, is J.J. Watt closer to elite or average?
Okay. Now, I have to admit something. Got to admit something about this. How much did I really know about what J.J. Watt did last year? Let me be honest about this, okay? When am I watching the Texans, really? Well, I have it on, you know, when they're in the red zone and Deshaun Watson's about to score, then I watch the Texans, right? Because it pops up, I watch the Texans. and I watched Deshaun Watson. How often am I analyzing the defense? I saw J.J. Watt play last year, Stephen A., and it looked to me like he was probably closer to average than elite, could still play. But I got to tell you something. When I saw him sign this $23 million guaranteed, the guarantee is $23 million, I said, excuse me. That dude is being paid like he's closer to elite than average. Let me look at this. And as it turns out, J.J. Watt, in terms of his win percentage for his matchup, is elite. He's top 10. He wins his matchup more than almost anyone else in football at his position when he's on the field. Now, injuries have been a concern, but when he's on the field, he is not just closer to elite, you might say he's still elite. Just because he's not what he was at his prime doesn't mean he's not elite. In his prime, he was in the top uppermost tier of greatest front seven players who ever lived. Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White, Bruce Smith, Aaron Donald. J.J. Watt is right there with those guys in his prime. So just because he's fallen off, don't mean he's fallen off closer to average. He's still, as it turns out, closer to elite than average, and that's why he got paid.
Me personally, I have no problem with him getting paid. He's a future Hall of Famer. When you think about guys with the most sacks since 2012, Chandler Jones is number one, J.J. Watt is number two. This brother is a future Hall of Famer, make no mistake about it. We know how formidable he is. We also know what a leader he is, and we also know what a leader in the community he is. I'm a huge, huge fan of J.J. Watt, and I believe he will be elite. But basically, right now, at this point in time, he appears to be closer to average than elite. I don't think that will last. I think that he was contaminated by being a member of the Texans organization, a part of all of that nonsense that was going on within that organization, which is universally recognized right now as one of the worst organizations in all of football, which is why Deshaun Watson wants out, which is why J.J. Watt went and apologized to Deshaun Watson, because he recognizes the cesspool that he was a part of. He wanted out, and he knows that Deshaun Watson deserves out. But that doesn't take away from the fact that he's had 9 sacks over the last 2 years, that he hasn't been the dude that we've known him to be, that registered about 18 sacks in 2018. I'm not saying that'll last. I believe in J.J. Watt, and I believe that he will make a difference in Arizona. Here's where I think he also kind of blew it, though. J.J. Watt clearly wants to be in a position to compete for a Super Bowl championship. I'm not saying that can't happen with Arizona. But if you're predicting that Arizona's going to do it ahead of the other options that he had available to him, whether it was Pittsburgh, whether it was Green Bay or another team, I would dare challenge anybody on that. In the NFC West, where you've got Seattle, you've got the Los Angeles Rams with their elite defense and Matthew Stafford there instead of Jared Goff. You got Jimmy Garoppolo coming back with Debo Samuels, with George Kittle and others, and Kyle Shanahan coaching that team. Bigger things are expected of the San Francisco 49ers. So you got 3 teams within the division that are considered better than you. Now, does that mean you won't improve and you won't leapfrog over one of them? Sure. What's the likelihood of you leapfrogging over all 3 of them? I sincerely doubt it. So in that regard, I would say J.J. Watt might have gone to the wrong team, because at this stage and point in his career, he clearly wants to compete for a Super Bowl championship. And although there's parity in the National Football League, you can stick up the joint 1 year and go to the Super Bowl the next year. And we understand that with Arizona, it's definitely possible. I've got some questions about Kingsbury. I don't have those questions about Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray can ball, but I got questions about Kingsbury. He still has a lot to prove to me as a head coach. But when I look at J.J. Watt, I'm fantasizing about him with Chandler Jones, who's got something to prove himself and all of that stuff. He only played 1 game last year. We'll see what transpires. Just that at this particular moment in time, even though we believe in J.J. Watt, I don't think we can look at him and think about anything other than closer to average than elite at this particular moment, even if we believe that will not last because he's with a different organization he's actually interested in playing for that deserves his services.
Well, first of all, closer to average than elite, I just disagree based on the evidence. I said top 10, Stephen, I meant top 10%. He was 15th in 2020 Watt rank. This is from on ESPN.com, by the way. 15th out of 119 qualified pass rushers in pass rush win rate, according to ESPN stats and information. So 119 guys qualify, and he's top 10%. There are only 14 guys with a better win rate in against their pass block. That's elite production. Now, you could say, well, injuries have kept him off the field enough. that you can't consider him really elite because, you know, the best ability is availability. But I also wonder if he can get over the injuries. Maybe that's actually affecting him when he's actually playing, right? Because it's not just like acute injury. You come back, now you're 100%. Sometimes you're less than 100%. And yet he's 15th out of 119 that qualify in win rate. He wins his matchup more than almost anyone else. And in terms of Arizona, it's interesting. He and DeAndre Hopkins are back on the same team. And it's almost like J.J. Watt saying, okay, Texans, remember, think of all the icons for that franchise. Andre Johnson, J.J. Watt, and now Deshaun Watson, who have spoken out essentially against the franchise. J.J. Watt goes and joins DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, of course, he got paid. That's number one. But goes and joins DeAndre Hopkins with Kyler Murray. Maybe you show the Texans what might have been. But you said it, Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt, oh, my God. Off either end, that's a whole lot of. And I'm not sure that Arizona won't be the best team in the division. I think it's going to be a very tightly contested division. It's a really good one. But Kyler Murray is still ascending. Matt Stafford, not ascending anymore in L.A. And the addition of a pass rusher like J.J. Watt could be a tipping point on the defense. And DeAndre Hopkins is there. I don't know. I think Arizona is as competitive as anyone in the NFC West.
They could be, but we don't know that for sure because we know that they have a coach that on a collegiate level, he never really won anything. And there was legitimate questions as to whether or not he deserved a head coaching job in Arizona. He's gotten a head coaching job, and they've had some good moments in Arizona. I'll give him credit for that. But in the same breath, we've looked at Kyler Murray. We looked at some of the things that have transpired. And we said, you know what? We questioned whether or not he needed better coaching on the NFL level from time to time, watching him go out on that football field and play against the odds that were stacked against him because of his coach. And so those are things that we have to consider. Again, I'm not trying to call a man incompetent or anything like that. And I certainly wish him nothing but the best. But right now, the only thing we know about Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach for the Arizona Cardinals, is that, man, he's got the flyest home of any coach that we've seen because we saw how he was chilling during the NFL draft last year. We saw that house in Arizona. It was looking pretty fly. That's what he's made most news for since he got
the head coaching
job.
It did look so much better than everyone else's, Stephen A. Admit
it. Without question. Like,
it was in a class by itself.
Let me tell you something. I wish I had that crib. I
mean,
had me saying, where the hell is that? I need to look at that crib.
You got good taste.
I mean, that's pretty damn fly. That's about the only thing we've been able to say about him as a head coach on the National Football League level. So, again, they've got some things to prove. I'm not saying he can't. But there were definitely questions about him getting that job to begin with based on his resume. And he's done nothing to quell the cynicism that came associated with it. Period.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. To the NFL we go. We know Russell Wilson's agent told Adam Schefter that Wilson is open to becoming a Cowboy. He didn't demand a trade. Michael Irvin said, Russ is coming for Dak's chair, adding fuel to the fire. Let's bring in former Cowboy, my guy Marcus Spears, joining us now. Marcus, top of the morning to you, sir. Where are you?
You're coming. Ma, what's up?
There we go.
What's
there we
up?
Go.
What's
How
up?
We doing?
I know it's about to go down because it's got the Cowboys in it. So I'm already braced for impact. So y'all go ahead and do y'all thing, Molly. I know you gonna ask Stephen A. Okay. or Max first. So let me just.
Well, then why don't you just let her do it? Why you got to give a sermon before
because
she speaks? Why she got to be? Why you got to give a sermon?
Out there.
Did you talk enough already on Get Up this morning? Ain't you talking this afternoon? You talking this afternoon on NFL Live. Why you got to give a
Stephen
sermon
a,
before Molly
mean?
Introduced the question?
What do you mean? Why does he have to give a sermon? You say he's a pastor. What's he supposed to do?
Well, damn it, I don't want it this early.
Thank you, Max.
Not on a Tuesday. Not on a Tuesday morning.
Well, come to the
late service. I always need the good word
to
in my life.
Service. Come to the later one.
Thanks for feeding our spirit.
I know I've seen pastors with better manners. I know I've seen pastors with better manners. I know that much.
Because they want to put on a good public
Are we
face.
Done?
I don't care about what the public thinks.
By the way, Molly, do you see his beard
just
sticking out?
I just had to get that out
like
that.
See the beard sticking out? He usually has it better trimmed, and now it's just sticking out and stuff like that. He's trying to be James Harden. But 100
Molly,
pounds heavier.
Molly,
oh,
the only
my
time,
goodness.
The only time, Molly, the only time you hear beard
when
mentions
you got friends
from
like
the
Stephen
guys
A.
that beards don't connect. When you got guys and friends that beards don't connect, that's when they point out full beards. Got
to connect the sideburns.
Full beard guys.
Hey, Molly.
Guys with full beards, we never point out
yes,
guys without full beards.
Yes, let's keep talking about
beards.
How everyone looks.
But somehow hey, we
Molly,
always
Molly,
get
Molly,
pointed
remember,
out.
Molly, remember, Molly, I'm over 50. It's time coming. We'll see.
All right.
We'll see.
Can we do this? Y'all are wild. All right, Stephen A., talk to me. Should Russ want to play with the Seahawks, Pete Carroll, up there, the NFC West? We know what they've done. Or should he come down to Dallas?
Believe it or not, I think he should come down to Dallas. And don't get me wrong, that's not my first choice. In terms, we know how I feel from a football perspective. It's the New Orleans Saints. But if you ask him between Seattle and Dallas, I would say Dallas. But I'm not talking about football. And I'm being totally serious here, Marcus, because I said this to Max yesterday. Russell Wilson has been a model citizen. He's been an all-pro. He's been a champion. He's gone to 2 Super Bowls. He's carried this franchise on his back the last 5 years. He's fresh off of a 40-touchdown season, throwing for over 4,000 yards. We know what he brings to the table from a leadership perspective. We know what he brings to the table in terms of his game-changing ability. And what he is off the field is not to be impugned in any way. We see all of that, yet what we're hearing is he wants out. What we're hearing is he had meetings with coaches, mm-hmm. and he stormed out of the room because he felt summarily dismissed and whatever. And one of the things, Marcus, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, but I brought this up yesterday, and I brought it up last week. So we got Deshaun Watson, and we got Dak Prescott, and we got Russell Wilson, all feeling disrespected. I wonder why that is. I really do. I'm wondering why brothers who play the quarterback position and do it pretty damn well, where they all get paid over $30 million, somehow, some way, have an issue with respect. I wonder why that is. Mm. And so for me, based on that and the fact that Russell Wilson being an experienced dude, and of course we know Sierra's got something to do with this because happy wife, happy life, and ain't no way in hell you could tell me that she wants to just stay in Seattle forever and ever. I don't know, but it stands to reason that if he's talking about moving on, she got something to do with that because I'd listen to her. I'd certainly listen to her. Here's the bottom line. I just have to look at it and I have to say, if Russell Wilson at this stage and point in his career is feeling devalued, lacking respect, and in that regard, that transcends the field of play, and that says something to me, something else is going on, which is why I say might as well go to Dallas, get the high profile, get the cachet, get the notoriety, even though you still got some of it anyway, but it goes to another level in Dallas and maximize that to your monetary benefit. That's the only reason I say Dallas, not because they're clearly not a better football franchise than the Seattle Seahawks.
After I'm over my shock that you said this, because yesterday I was in shock that Stephen A. Smith, would have the nerve to come on national TV and say that a great quarterback in his prime should leave the excellent situation he's in terms of the results, the football results, won a Super Bowl, went to another Super Bowl, wins double digits every year, a lot of years wins a playoff game at least, and go to a dysfunctional situation in Dallas that you routinely lampoon here on First Take and all your various other shows, Stephen A. Now, that's to begin. And by the way, there have been white quarterbacks in recent years who have felt disrespected by their team. Some have left, some haven't. Tom Brady, for example, the GOAT, right? Felt disrespected in New England, let's be honest. Aaron Rodgers, for a while, I think, felt disrespected in Green Bay. Let's be honest. One of them left, one of them didn't. And I will also, but it doesn't mean that there are not racial issues going on, Stephen A., with the other quarterbacks. But I would just point out that this is a phenomenon with great and powerful quarterbacks, right? They can feel like, wait a minute, I need to be included more in this. But let's talk about Russell Wilson's situation. You think he feels so disrespected in Seattle, that he should go to Dallas, where there is another African-American quarterback who feels disrespected right now? You think he should go there? What do you think is going to happen with Russell Wilson's team-friendly deal after another, 18 months, not even? It's going to be time to re-up, right? It's going to be time to work out an extension. But how do you think that's going to go in Dallas after the way it just went with Dak? Russell got paid in Seattle. Dak hasn't been paid in Dallas. You think that's just going to be smooth? And then there's the football of it all. If you're worried about your offensive line protecting you, do they do that in Dallas? Because that O-line is not going to be the same for a minute. That all-world O-line is gone. How about the defense? Because the Seattle defense was no good. But what about Dallas's? Dallas, for the branding of being a Dallas Cowboy, fine. But I don't think it's about just that for Russell Wilson. I think Russell is so competitive, he wants to be put in a position to win. Dallas does not make sense to me versus Seattle. For that, you stay in Seattle.
Well, to your point, Max, Dallas don't make sense for anybody right now, but Russell Wilson should want to be a Cowboy. And the reason why is because of what Stephen A. pointed out, like that situation. And it's also this, though, like get to the football part. A part of it is Russell Wilson wants to play in a system where he feels like he can put up those MVP level numbers all year long. And we've seen Dallas now, rightfully so, with Kellen Moore, have the ability for that offense to be explosive. That means you win games? I don't know. Russell Wilson right now is a better quarterback than Dak Prescott, but Dak is trending towards being in that conversation if he can continue to get better and be a part of a winning football team. Russ comes with a Super Bowl. He comes with another Super Bowl appearance. He comes with a contract that's favorable for the Cowboys. He also comes with the big name already, to Stephen A's point, that would catapult, again, that Dallas Cowboys quarterback thought process of everybody else thinking about that particular guy. It is the premier position in the NFL. Yes, guys are better. Yes, Patrick Mahomes is the face. Yes, Tom Brady has had a lot of success and the best to ever do it at that position. But if you have success as a Dallas Cowboy quarterback, you are that guy in the NFL. And Russ may be looking for that as well. But the ability to play downfield, the ability to put up crazy numbers, the ability to win the MVP, and maybe a little bit in the back of his mind, a little bit of competition to say, I'm the guy that can get the Dallas Cowboys to a Super Bowl. I think all of that is a part of his thought process. So I do think the Cowboys are intriguing. I'm with Stephen A, though. The Saints are the better destination between all of the teams that are in this conversation, but Russ leaving Seattle and going to Dallas, in his mind, I believe he would think that that's a better situation from an offensive standpoint philosophically, but also the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys, which is what's been a part of the intrigue for Dak Prescott and why I believe he's tried to hold on to this as long as possible without coming out as mad and super disgruntled, because it is the prestige of playing that position for that franchise and organization. But Russ, to list the Cowboys, he know damn well the Cowboys ain't in no Super Bowl window. He know that if you play for the Dallas Cowboys, you play well and you play quarterback, you could potentially be in a booth in TV making $17 million a year to call a game for 3.5 hours on Sunday.
That's it. And here's the thing, Max. You know, I mean, listen, I'm known for trolling Cowboy fans. We know how I feel about Cowboy fans, not necessarily the organization. But on this particular matter, I'm not playing. I'm not joking at all. I'm dead serious about it, only from the standpoint that I'm talking about Russell Wilson off the field. I know the Seattle Seahawks is a better situation. I know the New Orleans Saints is a better situation. Even though throwing the ball to Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Gallup, or handing it off to Ezekiel Elliott, there's nothing to sneeze at. But this is something a bit different. And if you're Russell Wilson and you got to deal with some nonsense, you might as well deal with it being the face of a franchise that's worth $5.7 billion, that's on national TV all the time, and your association with the brand can reap goobs and gobs of monetary benefits for you. You're thinking long term. And if Russell Wilson, who's highly intelligent, has reached the point where he says, you know what, I don't know if I want to be here anymore, that's some serious, serious business, because there's nothing in his history that points to him even remotely coming close to doing something like this, which tells me somebody under Pete Carroll's staff or Pete Carroll himself has greatly, greatly offended this man. And that's what I'm paying attention to here.
And another,
right, we'll leave it on that note. Marcus Spears, we'll see you on NFL Live 4 Eastern. Marcus, sorry, we got a hard out because we got Mel Kiper Jr. waiting for us.
It's not a money issue.
Yeah, it's not a money issue.
Okay. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRICEbikes.com. Mel Kiper has Mac Jones going to the Panthers with the 8th pick in his latest mock draft, but it was his similarities to another quarterback expressed to ESPN's Mike Reese that made a little news. Take a listen.
And I hate to say it, Mike. I mean, he's got a little bit of Brady in him.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying he's ever going to be Tom Brady. He won't be close, probably. But, you know, you never know. But he's got that competitiveness. He kind of does everything with a smile. And, you know, Brady didn't smile probably as much as he does. But, I mean, he's one of those guys. He's so smart. He picked that offense up in Mobile like it was nothing. And while other quarterbacks were struggling with the verbiage, you know, communicating that in the huddle, he was, boom, in and out of the huddle quicker than anybody I've ever seen.
On a Yahoo podcast, Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa said this about his former backup at Alabama. I would say he's a sly kind of athletic person. He's a more mobile Tom Brady. He's very athletic, very smart, too. Whatever team gets him is going to be very lucky. On that note, we bring in Mel Kiper Jr. Mel, great to have you with us. I will get to you in just a moment. Sure. Looking forward to this discussion. So, obviously, we said some similarities with Tom Brady. We know the Pats don't have a quarterback. Stephen A., do you think Bill Belichick should prioritize a quarterback and trade up and get Mac Jones?
Hell yeah. Absolutely. I mean, what are you going to do? Rely on Jarrett Stidham? I ain't going to cut it. Rely on Cam Newton? I ain't going to cut it. You need a quarterback in New England. There ain't no question about it. And if you believe so much in Jimmy Garoppolo, okay, why the hell wouldn't you believe in Mac Jones? The brother threw for 4,500 yards last season.
41 touchdowns, just 4 interceptions, and won a national title. Now, it does help when you got Devontae Smith to throw the football to. You got Najee Harris to hand the football off to and run the football to. Jaylen Waddle wasn't really healthy for most of the season, okay? But, you know, when he was available, you had him to throw the football to. And you were coached by Nick Saban. And Nick Saban and Bill Belichick being close, communicating as much as they do, respecting one another as much as they do. Certainly, if you're Bill Belichick, and this is a product coming out of Nick Saban's system, you damn right you should do it that way. But he ain't the only one. I got news for you. If I'm the Jets, I consider it. If I'm the Philadelphia Eagles at the 6th pick, I consider it now that Carson Wentz is gone and it's just Jalen Hurts there. I consider it all. I'm not ruling anything out right now. That's the way I look at it. And I'll end it by saying this to both you, Mel, and Max Kellerman. The way we've seen Mac Jones play, I want somebody, I understand Trevor Lawrence is another world. I totally get that. Trevor Lawrence is in a class by himself. But I'm trying to figure out, how come we haven't heard more about Mac Jones when it comes to comparisons to a Justin Fields or a Zach Wilson? I'm trying to figure that out. Can you help me out, guys? Please.
Well, let me say this. First of all, Mel, when you compare him to Tom Brady, I'm so sick of people when someone like you or it's someone in the media makes a comparison. Oh, are you saying you have to stop and say, I'm not saying he's Tom Brady. Listen, dummies, it's okay to use an all-time great as a comparison. It doesn't mean that Mel's saying this guy's going to be as great as Tom Brady. It means he does certain things that remind him of Tom Brady. It's not that hard. And that's saying a lot, by the way. That's a really good thing because Tom Brady just showed once again that the greatest attributes a quarterback can have are leadership and judgment, quick processing and good judgment and leadership. Those are the greatest assets. And if Mac Jones has that, that says a lot of good things. I'm also impressed that Devontae Smith, who's talked about, is reported, he and Tua talking about running it back in Miami, right? And that could happen. When asked if he'd take Tua or Mac Jones, didn't hesitate, the reports are, he said Mac Jones. That tells me a lot, actually. So let me just say this. If Bill Belichick feels the same way, he needs to trade up and grab him. He needs to get a young quarterback who is going to be the Patriots quarterback for a long time. That has to happen. Even if he feels like it won't be next year that the guy's starting or playing a lot or winning for them, he's got to get that done. But who says it has to be Mac Jones? Trey Lance, who now is people think may be picked before Mac Jones, but who knows how this works out. Trey Lance has a lot of the things that Belichick likes, but because he can also move, people don't think of it the same way, but quick decisions, quick release. My point, Mel, is if it's Mac Jones, fine. But the main thing is Belichick's got to find a guy he believes in and draft that guy this year.
No question. And the Mac Jones-Tom Brady comparison came up when I looked at Tom Brady when he came as a late sixth-round pick after they drafted somebody with their pick in the sixth round, a cornerback out of Virginia, New England did. Took Brady as a comp pick late in the sixth round. He had a 5'2", 440. He had a 24 vertical. Those were the two worst vertical 40 time of any quarterback I've ever evaluated outside of Ryan Mallett, and Mallett was drafted by the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick. So when you look at Mac Jones, he's not Joe Burrow. He doesn't have the ability to beat you with his legs and run for first downs, okay? But he slips, he slides, he creates with his legs enough in the pocket to get the ball to those receiving options, as he did in that national championship game when he got the ball to Jaleel Billingsley, tight end, to help beat Ohio State. You think about also Mac Jones, the concern, guys, is only 17 career starts. Okay, that's it. Now, he completed over 77% of his passes. You referenced his touchdown-interception ratio. I've talked about his leadership, his competitiveness, his incredible intelligence. I get all that, his incredible accuracy. But the 17 career starts is the one concern, in addition to being able to move and avoid and create with his legs, okay, enough to get those first downs. In a league now, it's all about mobility and dual-threat quarterbacks. Some have called quarterbacks like Mac Jones a dinosaur. Well, Tom Brady, if he's a dinosaur, he won a Super Bowl at 43, and he was a late sixth-round pick when he came out. I was comparing more Mac Jones to what Tom was when he came out of Michigan, not what he was when he became the greatest of all time. So I think that's why you have to go back and kind of evaluate things as they were, not as they are right now. And when Brady came out, he was a late sixth-round pick for a reason. Right. Ironically, the comp is a top-10 pick. So a late sixth-round pick, now a top-10 pick. Tom Brady has certainly helped Mac Jones, and those comparisons have certainly helped Mac Jones as well.
I definitely agree with you. When I think about Trey Lance at North Dakota State, I'll say this much. Forget, you know, you had North Dakota State. We understand that. It's not Ohio State. It's not Alabama. But zero interceptions for a season is zero interceptions. Threw 28 touchdowns, not a single interception. So I'll give him his props for that. But here's what I would say to you, Mel. I'm just looking at it right now. And this is where, if I'm Bill Belichick, this is where I got to think twice. I got to think long and hard about Mac Jones, Mel. The New England Patriots at the 15th pick. I'm going to start off at number four, Mel and Max. I got Atlanta at four, Cincinnati at five, Philadelphia at six, Detroit at seven, Carolina at eight, Denver at nine, Cowboys at 10, Giants at 11, San Francisco at 12, Chargers at 13, Minnesota at 14. From the fourth to the 14th pick, the only teams that definitively don't need a quarterback because they've got their guy are the Chargers at 13th, and the Cincinnati Bengals. But even Joe Burrow had the nasty injury, but I think he'll be back. Outside of that, everybody from 4 to 14 arguably needs a damn quarterback.
Yeah, unfortunately,
so to me, if I'm Bill Belichick, if I'm Bill Belichick and I got an opportunity to move up to get Mac Jones, I might do that, guys, based on that reality alone. To that, y'all say what?
Mel, do you want to take it?
I say fine, Max. I think we also have to realize as we force quarterbacks up a lot higher than they should be pushed up the board. That's why from 2009 to 2016, 0-22 quarterbacks were the team that drafted them. Going back to 2000, of the 44 that went in the first round up till 2016, only three right now are with their respective teams that drafted them. That would be, you look at Tom Brady. That was the 2000. That's why I referenced 2000. But the only three are Matt Ryan, Ben Roethlisberger, and Aaron Rodgers. That's it. So I think when you look at this, be careful. Like I say, Detroit has Jared Goff. Well, they better draft a quarterback because Jared Goff hasn't proven anything of late, although he took a team to a Super Bowl early on. No, because we don't know how good these quarterbacks are going to be. We all talk them up, and they all get pushed up the board, and they all, some of them fizzle out to nothing. So let's realize if you're the Detroit Lions, take somebody to help Jared Goff, like a wide receiver like Jalen Waddle or Devontae Smith from Alabama, and not take the quarterback. Philadelphia, help out Jalen Hurts. Get a receiver. So this notion you got to take the quarterback, I think is ridiculous.
Well, I would say also that there are some quarterbacks whose talent jumps out at you. And those guys, maybe even if you have, for example, what's happening with the Jets or Giants right now, Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones. Even if you have a prospect who you may like, you may look at your own guy and say, is that prospect really better than my own guy? You know, and in the case of Mac Jones, maybe a lot of teams would say no. Not in the kind of measurable way that covers me in the event that it doesn't work out. People like to mitigate risk, right? To hedge against risk. And I just think, and I brought up the Giants, I think about Daniel Jones, Mel, Stephen A., they seem married to that guy. Whereas if I were running the Giants and Mac Jones were available, would I want to try that? Sure. But I'm not sure, Stephen A., 4 through 14, that all those teams are thinking that way. I'd say maybe half of them are looking for quarterbacks, and the other half may not like a non-Trevor Lawrence guy in this draft better than what they have right now, whether or not I agree with them.
My only question to you before we get out of this segment, Mel, what about those who would argue that Alabama quarterbacks haven't necessarily been that successful on the pro level? What do you say to that?
Could care less, really. There's always guys, somebody's going to do it. I don't get into all that stuff about with Ohio State and this Justin Fields. Bottom line is, I think you got to go with quarterbacks you know something about. These teams that have Jared Goff and they have Sam Darnold, they know what they have. Goff's played. Darnold's played. They know those guys. You don't know what these rookies are going to be, these young quarterbacks coming into the league. Mm-hmm. That's why it's easy to say, well, they're going to be great because they have these traits. Well, we don't know that. So if what you have there, and Daniel Jones, I'd rather have Daniel Jones in these quarterbacks. You have him, you've developed him, you showed signs that he can be really good. You get the talent around him better. And that's the thing. You're looking at a quarterback new, you know nothing about, as opposed to getting a player that can help your incumbent quarterback. That's, to me, is the better way to go. Unless it's Trevor Lawrence or unless you need a Justin Fields. I think the 49ers could use an upgrade over Jimmy G. The Patriots have to get a quarterback. You were at the top of the rung. You were the number one team because of Tom Brady. Now you're the fourth in the division. You've got to find a way to get one of these quarterbacks.
No question. And they currently have that 15th overall pick. Mel Kiper, always a pleasure. Great analysis. We'll talk to you soon.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.